So welcome everyone this morning. I pray for your blessings and permission. Nice to see His Grace Marahari Prabhu here. Welcome Prabhuji. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gaurinitai ki. So with your permission and blessings, we'll try to share something as we prepare for Janmashtami. The verse on the board is a very, very special verse. To some of you it may be familiar, and to others maybe not so much, but this is an outstanding verse of the 10th canto, which is perhaps, one could say in many ways, the most important verse, and I'll explain why. And it really gives us a sense of what we aspire for as we enter into Janmashtami and try to deepen our relationship with Sri Krishna. And there are some key, amazing points that we can take away. So the way I'll do it is I'll just recite, we'll do the verse together, and then before I actually go through the purport, then I'll just give some background to the verse, and then we'll go into the translation and purport. So if you can repeat after me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnav literature. Yet Mother Yashoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child. So I'll just read the first paragraph of the purport. It's a long purport, and then we'll see how far we get. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15.15 by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the purpose of studying the Vedas is to understand Him. Vedes cha sarved aham eva vedya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami that there are three purposes in the Vedas. One is to understand our relationship with Krishna, sambandha. Another is to act according to that relationship, abhideya. And the third is to reach the ultimate goal, prayojana. The word prayojana means necessities, and the ultimate necessity is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, prema pumartho mahan. The greatest necessity for a human being is the achievement of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here we see that Mother Yashoda is on the highest stage of necessity, for she is completely absorbed in love for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Before we go into this verse, I'll try to just give some background context. Srila Prabhupada was full of love for Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada saw a picture of Krishna, he didn't just see art, he saw Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada saw the deities, he was not just seeing some forms of matter, but he was interacting with the Supreme Lord. And in this way, Srila Prabhupada brought all of the wealth in order to connect the devotees to Krishna in a very real and a very, very personal way. One other gift that Srila Prabhupada gave to each and every devotee in the Krishna consciousness movement is the gift of opening the doors to the holy dham, the playground of God, to Sri Vrindavan Dham, Krishna's own holy land. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, as soon as he could, he took the devotees back to Vrindavan so that he could introduce them to all the places where Krishna performed his pastimes. So in Kartik of 1972, Prabhupada said, I will go with all the devotees to Vrindavan, and for the month of Kartik, we will all be together in Sri Vrindavan Dham, and we will perform the Kartik Vrata, we'll go on Vrajamandal Parikrama, and we'll hear from the nectar of devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So indeed, Srila Prabhupada went in 1972 with all of the devotees. Srila Prabhupada stayed in his rooms in Radha Damodar, where he was very, very happy. The Radha Damodar temple is said to be the hub of the wheel of the spiritual world, the very center of existence, the center of spiritual reality. And there Prabhupada stayed, and the devotees stayed close by in case he got. And every morning and evening, I believe, Srila Prabhupada would lecture on the Nectar of Devotion, the famous Nectar of Devotion lectures. And every day Srila Prabhupada would take the devotees out to different places in Vrindavan, taking them to holy places. One day Prabhupada took the devotees to the temples of the Goswamis. Another day he took them to Seva Kunj and explained the pastimes that Krishna has with his devotees. And on one particular occasion, all of the devotees got into the bus, and Srila Prabhupada got into his ambassador car. Every car in India is an ambassador. Only one type of car. So Prabhupada got in his ambassador car, and they went to a very, very beautiful place. And there's very beautiful video footage of this, you can see. They went to a very, very special place called Brahmanda Ghat. Anda means egg, and Brahmanda means the egg-like universe. Brahmanda Ghat is a very, very special place. There, Prabhupada took all the devotees. He told them, go and bathe in the Jamuna. So they all went and to bathe. And they said, Prabhupada, you come also. But I think Prabhupada was not feeling so well. So he said, no, I will not go in, you go. And then all the devotees went into the Jamuna and they were bathing. And Prabhupada saw them having such a good time. He said, okay, I will go in also. So then Prabhupada put his gamsha on and he also went inside. And then Prabhupada told the story of Brahmanda Ghat. And it's very, very amazing when you watch the video of Prabhupada telling this story, his eyes become very big and he becomes very animated and he's in the pastime. Krishna and Balaram grew up, as we know, in Vrindavan. When they were very, very young, after having been transferred by Vasudev to Gokul. Then at one point, Nanda Maharaj knew that he would have to do the naming ceremony of Krishna and Balaram. So Garga Muni, great saintly personality, came. And so Nanda Maharaj, knowing Garga Muni's spiritual stature, he said, you please do the naming ceremony for my two sons. Garga Muni was reserved because he knew, well, I am the priest of the Yadus. If I do the ceremony, Kamsa may find out, he may begin to suspect that you are the ones that are going to kill him. So therefore, I don't want to bring attention, I don't want to bring undue disturbances here in Vrindavan. Nanda Maharaj insisted, no, Garga Muni, you please do the naming ceremony. So undercover, on the D-low, as they say, Garga Muni did the naming ceremony of Krishna and Balaram. He looked at the fair-skinned Balaram. Ramante yogino nante satyanande chidatmani iti rama pade nasho param brahma vidiyate. He looked at this fair-skinned young boy and said, he will bring so much satyanande chidatmani. He will bring so much happiness. Therefore, Ram, and Bala, because he has so much strength, and he will bring so much strength to the world. Therefore, Bala, Ram, yes, he will be known as Balaram. And then Krishna, he looked at Krishna and was probably thinking, how to name Krishna? Krishir bhuvachaka shabdo nascha nivriti vachaka tayorekyam param brahma krishna ityabhidhiyate. Krish refers to attraction, that person who can attract. And Na refers to Ananda, who is filled with an ocean of Ananda and who will bring an ocean of Ananda. And when these two syllables, Krishna, come together, Tayorekyam Param Brahma, this indicates that it's the Param Brahma, it's the Supreme. So he thought, this is a very fitting name. Yes, he will be known as Krishna, the all-attractive one. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, Krishna is not just all-attractive, but he's all-attracted. It's not just that Krishna attracts the whole world, but he is completely attracted by the love of his devotees. And therefore, Aham bhakta paradhino yashvantantra ivadvija, Krishna says, I am not an independent, I am completely controlled by my devotees. So in this way, Garga Muni named Krishna and Balaram, and Krishna and Balaram continued their beautiful activities in Vrindavan, sometimes stealing, most of the time stealing, running, playing in the dust, catching hold of the tails of calves and being dragged through the land of Vrindavan, sometimes urinating in a very clean place and bringing so much anxiety to the Brajabasis. And in this way, Krishna and Balaram had many, many beautiful pastimes. And it said that on one occasion, at this place that we know now today as Brahmanda Ghat, Krishna, sitting in a kind of secluded place away from the cowherd boys, decided that he would eat dirt. He would eat the mud. He would eat the dust of Vrindavan and place that in his mouth. So indeed, Krishna, sitting somewhat secluded from everyone else, began to do that. He picked up the dust, the mud, the dirt, and he, with his small palm, he put that dust and dirt in his mouth. And from a distance, the gopas saw Krishna doing that. And when they saw Krishna doing that, immediately they began running around and they all got together and they got in a team and they came to Balaram and they said, Balaram, Balaram, do you know what Krishna has done? He's put mud in his mouth. He's put dirt in his mouth. He's put the Vraja Raj, the dust of Vraja, in his mouth. Balaram heard all of their complaints, and then Balaram went to Mother Yashoda. He went to Mother Yashoda and he said, Yashoda Mai, do you know Krishna every day he does so many nefarious activities, but today he has done something unspeakable. He has put dirt, he has put mud in his mouth. Mother Yashoda, Vyabhicharini Bhav, was overcome by emotions and began to go into anxiety, anticipation, what has happened. She ran to Krishna with a mix of deep compassion and simultaneous anger. She looked at Krishna and said, Krishna, have you eaten dirt? All of the gopas, all of your friends, they're saying you've eaten dirt. Krishna said, it's all a conspiracy. Krishna said, because I defeated them. I defeated them in wrestling. Now they want to get their own back. That was his estimation of the situation. Other acharyas say the reason the gopas ganged up on Krishna, you know the other reason the gopas ganged up on Krishna and told on him, is because they didn't have a problem with Krishna eating dirt. They had no problem with that. In fact, they were quite happy about it. But what they were annoyed about is that Krishna did it alone. I mean, stealing, you know, urinating, they were up for anything. They were up for any adventure, but we'd all do it together. Interesting that they never told on Krishna about stealing, because they were with him. They were all doing it together. But the acharyas say, because this pastime Krishna did it alone, then the gopas became very angry. So then they told on Mother Yashoda. Another explanation is given that the reason Balaram became inspired to tell on Krishna is because his estimation of the situation was that Krishna had come to relieve the burden of the earth. Krishna had come to relieve the burden of the earth. And Balaram looked at him and said, you just to take a few grains of the earth and put it in your mouth and you think job done? You think that's what it means to relieve the burden of the earth? Just to eat a few grains from Vraj? That's not good enough. So he was not, so that's why he told. So there are different explanations why they told on him. What is the reason? Why did Krishna eat the dirt? That is also a big discussion that goes on amongst the acharyas. In some versions it said Krishna ate the dirt because he was trying to cure himself. Cure himself? Cure himself from what? Krishna was eating so much butter, so much yoga every single day, more than he could handle, that it had become an imbalance in his system. Indigestion. And therefore, according to Ayurveda, if you have an indigestion of dairy products, then you have to have some dry element like dirt. Krishna wanted to cure himself. He also wanted to cure himself because sometime earlier he had ingested some toxic substances from the breast of Putana. The poison of Putana, which was said to rival the Halahal poison which emerged from the milk ocean when the demigods and demons churned that milk ocean. In order to counteract the effects of that poison, Krishna ate dirt. So some acharyas say Krishna ate dirt because he wanted to cure himself. Some acharyas say Krishna ate dirt not because he wanted to cure himself, but because he wanted to equip and empower himself. Really? How does dust equip and empower you? Krishna was a Vaishya. He was playing in Vrindavan in Gokul as a cowherd boy. But he knew that at some point in the future, I will have to go. I will have to go out. I will have to go to Mathura. I will have to go to Dwarka. And in Mathura and Dwarka, I will have to do the work of a Kshatriya. Paritranaya sadunam. Vinashaya cha duskritam. I'll have to kill. I'll have to manage. I'll have to create so many things as a Kshatriya. So Kshatriya dharma means Rajagun. Rajagun. You need to have some passion. So Krishna knew eventually I will have to do Kshatriya Dharma, and to do Kshatriya Dharma I will need some Raja. I'll need some passion. So in order to equip and empower myself with the Raja to do the work of a Kshatriya, then in order to get that Raja, I will eat Vraja Raja. I will eat the dust of Vrindavan. So Krishna, why did he eat the dust? Because he wanted to equip and empower himself. Some acharyas say, no, Krishna did not take dust because he wanted to cure himself. He did not take dirt because he wanted to empower himself. He took the dirt because he wanted to purify himself. What? How you say? The dust of Vraj? Purify? Why? Because Krishna, as he was growing up, every other word he said was a lie. How many lies he was telling? And when you tell a lie, it said that your entire being becomes contaminated. And when your entire being becomes contaminated, then you have to do achman. There are different ways to do achman. One is with water, jal. But the other way to do achman is by taking dirt. It's also said to be very pure. So some acharyas say, no, Krishna took the dust of Vraj because he wanted to purify himself. Other acharyas say, no, Krishna did not take dust because he wanted to cure himself. Not because he wanted to empower himself. Not because he wanted to purify himself. Krishna took the dust of Vraj because he wanted to bless himself. God wants to bless himself. What do you mean? Because who has traversed the lands of Vraj? Who has imprinted their lotus feet all over every corner of Vraj? All the great Vaishnavas, all the great devotees, all of those who completely gave their hearts to Krishna. They have walked all over the land of Vraj. And therefore Krishna wanted to put that dust in his mouth, because he wanted to get the blessings of his own devotees. This is Vrindavan. Vrindavan is not just the place of Krishna, but it's the place of the great devotees. And Shastra explains, Yatirta buddhi shalile nakar hichit janeshvabi geshu sa eva gokara. If you go to a holy place, you may bathe in so many rivers, you may see so many places, you may pray to so many deities, but if you do not, janeshvabi geshu, if you do not approach the learned devotees, the sold out Vaishnavas, if you do not hear them, if you do not meet them, and if you don't see their heart, then actually you have not been on pilgrimage. Krishna ate the dust of Raj because he wanted to be blessed. But then it's mentioned, Krishna did not eat the dust of Raj simply because he wanted to be cured, purified, blessed, empowered. Shri Radha Gopalananda ki jai. These are all the transcendentally selfish reasons why Krishna ate dirt. But there is a selfless reason why Krishna ate dirt. Anyone want to give a guess? There is a completely selfless reason why Krishna ate the dirt of Raj. To bless the land of Raj. Yes? Shastra explains, Yashmin tusta jagantustya. When Krishna eats, when Krishna is satisfied, the whole universe eats, the whole universe is satisfied. Krishna thought to himself, Raj, such a holy place, such a sacred place, such a place of blessings. Some may not make it to Vraj. Some, for some reason or the other, there may be a restriction to coming to Vraj. And therefore Krishna thought to himself, let me take the dust of Vraj in my mouth, because Yashmin tusta jagantustya, that when I eat, the whole universe eats. Everyone eats. Yatha taror mula nisecha neina tripyanti tat skanda bujo pashaka. Krishna is the root, the mula taror, the root of the tree, and when you feed the tree, the whole tree becomes energized. So Krishna, for many, many reasons, ate the dirt of Vraj. Mother Yashoda looked at Krishna and said, tell me conclusively, you're denying it, they're accusing it, then you're giving arguments, they're giving more arguments. Krishna, tell me conclusively, did you eat the dirt? Did you eat the mud? Is it in your mouth? Krishna said, I already said my version to you, but if you don't believe me, why don't you just open your eyes, I'll open my mouth, and you can see for yourself. So Mother Yashoda said, okay, let's do it. So right there in that moment, Krishna, the innocent young child who could hardly walk, whose small teeth were just coming out from his front lip, opened his mouth. Here you see a meeting of perhaps the most innocent, childlike, sweet vision of Krishna. I mean, you know, a small baby looking right in their face at their lips and their small teeth, and this is like, it's a meeting of Mother Yashoda seeing the most sweet and innocent and childlike and beautiful aspect of Krishna. And when Krishna opened his mouth, then what did she see? She saw all the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. She saw the entirety of material nature. She saw the mountains, the lakes, the lands. She saw all living entities, all the species. She saw the demigods. She saw the land of Vraj. She even saw herself in Krishna's mouth. completely adbhut, completely wondrous, extraordinary. And in this moment, these two visions met, the complete sweetness of Krishna with the complete greatness of Krishna. And it was a moment of complete confusion where sweetness and greatness come together. And so Mother Yashoda became completely baffled. She became completely unable to ascertain the real situation. She thought to herself, is this Krishna's Maya? Is this the material energy? Is this yoga Maya? Is this some hallucination? Does Krishna, my child, have mystic powers? How is it that I'm seeing such things? In that moment, she began to consider, maybe all along I've been in illusion. Maybe I'm thinking Nanda Maharaj is my husband. Maybe I'm thinking Krishna is my child. But maybe the reality is way beyond all of this. Maybe, just maybe, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Vyasadeva gives this verse, which is straight after Mother Yashoda has these thoughts of Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse is given. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. Yet Mother Yashoda considered the Supreme Person her ordinary child. After having all of those thoughts that maybe Krishna is the Supreme Lord, in the very next moment, her motherly love overtook everything and she just began to see Krishna as her young child again, in a flash of a moment. Her love was so great that it covered all of that greatness. It covered all of that Aishwarya. It covered all of that inconceivable, extraordinary potency of Krishna. Her love was so great that became more prominent than anything else. And in a moment, she just took Krishna on her lap and she just started to treat him as her young baby boy again. This is incredible. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this verse is the Paribhasa Sutra of the 10th canto. The Paribhasa Sutra means a verse which is known as the Emperor verse. It's the verse through which all other verses are seen. It's the verse which is like a candle which lights up the entirety of the scripture and brings forth the most prominent point that needs to be understood. This verse is the Paribhasa Sutra of Krishna Leela. Why? Because it shows that in their relationship with Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna, the charm of Krishna, the complete embodiment of Krishna as the most charming personality in the universe, that's what comes to the forefront in the minds of the devotees. Vrindavan is known as a tirtha. A tirtha, a holy place, we know tirtha means a holy place, but the word tirtha also means a bridge. Vrindavan is a bridge, it's a gateway, it's a portal. It's a means by which one reality is connected to another reality. We may look at the spiritual world, we may look at the narrations of the 10th canto and think Vrindavan is very, very far. But Bhoma Vrindavan, the Vrindavan of this world, acts as a bridge. It acts as a bridge through which we can access the eternal world. It's an entrance to eternity. However, Vrindavan is not just a bridge that carries us to the spiritual world, but Vrindavan is also a place which bridges our consciousness so that we begin to understand Vrindavan consciousness.
There is tattva and there is rasa. In our practitioner stage of Krishna consciousness, tattva or the philosophy is very, very important. But in Vrindavan consciousness, tattva is not important. It's simply permeated with rasa. In our stage of Krishna consciousness, Vaidhi, or following of rules and regulations, is very, very important. But in Vrindavan consciousness, there's no Vaidhi, there is only Raga. In our stage of Krishna consciousness, there is very much an emphasis on Sambhoga, trying to meet Krishna. Vrindavan is permeated by Vipralamba, separation, desperation, searching for Krishna. This is a very, very special type of meeting, Viraha. One of the acharyas explains Viraha. V means Vishesha, Raha means Rahasyam Unmilam. So, Viraha means separation, but in a deeper sense, it means a very, very special type of confidential meeting. So, Vrindavan is a completely different reality. In our stage of Krishna consciousness, spiritual life is very much about sadhana, regulation. But what is the purpose of all of that sadhana? Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya, sadhya sa sadhana bhida, nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakyatyam riddhi sadhyata. Rupa Goswami says, the purpose of sadhana, bhavasa sadhana bhida, the purpose of sadhana is to develop bhava. So in our stage, sadhana regulation is very important. But what is all of that sadhana for? Ultimately to awaken bhav, desperation. Regulation is there so that one can ultimately develop desperation. This is Vrindavan consciousness. So, what we're seeing here, in this Paribhasa Sutra of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, is Mother Yashoda's rasa is coming out. Mother Yashoda's complete raga, attachment for Krishna, is coming out. Mother Yashoda's desperation, bhava for Krishna, is coming out. Srila Prabhupada introduced us to Vrindavan so that these sentiments could ultimately arise within each and every practitioner of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada introduced this in a very controlled way so as not to compromise its purity. In our stage, we focus on tattva, learning philosophy. We focus on Vaidhi. We focus on sadhana. Yet, Srila Prabhupada gave all of this to help us understand that eventually these are some of the elements that we have to introduce into our practice in a very chaste way. Otherwise, we are not fulfilling the real purpose of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis came to give. The Bhagavatam establish who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ete chamsha kala pumsha krishnas tu bhagavan svayam. The Bhagavatam establishes who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the Goswamis, the Chaitanya Bhaktas, they don't just establish who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. They establish who is the Supreme Personality of Krishna. If Bhagavatam establishes the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna, the Goswamis establish who is the Supreme Personality of Krishna. Shyama meva param rupam puri madhu puri vara vayakaishodakam dhyayam adya eva paro rasa. Rupa Goswami says in Hadyavali, Shyama meva param rupam. Krishna has many forms. But who is the param rupam? Shyama meva param rupam. And where does he live? Puri madhu puri vara in Mathura, Mandal, Vrindavan Dham. And Vaya Keshora Kam Dhyayam, and of all ages, which is most worshipable? Keshora.
Adya eva paro rasa. There are many rasas, but Madhurya rasa is the highest.
So the Goswamis, therefore, if you want to understand Bhagavatam, actually you cannot understand Bhagavatam simply from a Krishna Bhakta. You have to understand Bhagavatam from a Chaitanya Bhakta. Therefore, the Bengali poet was told, Jaha Bhagavata Pada Vaishnavirastane Ekanta Ashraya Kare Chaitanya Charane. He was said, if you want to understand Bhagavatam, if you want to understand the supreme gift of what is available for you, you have to approach a Vaishnav. But what kind of Vaishnav do you have to approach? Ekanta Ashraya, a Vaishnav who has taken shelter. A Vaishnav who has taken shelter of you. Of who? Ekanta Ashraya Kare Chaitanya Charane. A Vaishnav who has taken shelter of Mahaprabhu. Because the Gaura Bhaktas, they know actually what is the essence of Bhagavatam, the deepest mysteries of Vrindavan consciousness. And so as Janmashtami is coming, the meditation is that what Srila Prabhupada gave us, what the Goswamis and all of their followers gave us, was the most natural practice of spiritual life. Sometimes people read the books and they say, this is mythology. So then we pump loads of energy to teach them, this is not a mythology, this is the highest theology. This is deep, this is philosophical, this is... But then later on, once we've established Krishna consciousness as the highest theology, later on we may also try to teach people that, no, no, Krishna consciousness is not mythology, it's not just a theology, Krishna consciousness is a religion. You're supposed to do something with it. You're supposed to practice. You're supposed to apply it in your life. Later on, we may teach people, no, no, Krishna consciousness is not just a religion. Krishna consciousness is a spiritual science. This is something you can experience. You can interact with God. But the amazing thing is, in Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness is not mythology. Krishna consciousness is not theology. Krishna consciousness is not a religion. Krishna consciousness is not even a spiritual science. In Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness is life. It's just life. They love Krishna, Krishna loves them. End of story. No need for any rules and regulations, no need for any philosophy. It's just life. It's just natural. Mother Yashoda, it said her heartbeat is like a mridanga. And the ankle bells are like a cartels. And every day she's just singing about her son. Mother Yashoda doesn't need a specific time to do a kirtan. When she's just living, it's a kirtan. When she's churning butter, it's a kirtan. Because it has just become so natural for her to interact with Krishna in that way. And so our prayer and our hope is that Krishna consciousness for us will go. It will go beyond. It will go beyond being a philosophy or theology. It will go beyond being our religion. It will go beyond a physical, spiritual science or a process. Our hope is that Krishna consciousness will just become life. Because this is Vrindavan. This is love. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada said, the Vedas teach us through three stages, Samvanda, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And the ultimate necessity is Prayojana. The ultimate necessity is love. In Samvanda, we're seeing Krishna, but we're seeing Krishna philosophically. In Abhideya, we're seeing Krishna, but we're seeing Krishna through a process. But in Prayojana, we're seeing Krishna spontaneously, because of love. Because that's what became most prominent. Because that's what came to the forefront. And so, as we read this Paribhasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in immediate inspection, it may not seem like, why is this verse so important? Why is this verse the Paribhasa Sutra? This verse is the Paribhasa Sutra because daya, you can study all the Vedas and know Krishna as the Purusha, the Supreme Enjoyer. Upanishad, you can read all the Upanishads and know that Krishna is the indwelling super soul. Satvate, even the great devotees, they may know Krishna is Bhagavan. Sankhya Yoga, you may study Sankhya Yoga and know that Krishna is the Yajna Purush, the ultimate absolute truth. But Mother Yashoda, for her, none of this was important. Atmajam, Krishna, he's just my son. And I love him. And I think of him all day. And that's all that matters. And so we pray in this way that through Srila Prabhupada's grace, who introduced us to Vrindavan, that Krishna consciousness can just become life. And worshipping Krishna can just become the most natural expression of love. Because this is the simplicity of what the Krishna consciousness movement is ultimately about. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If anyone has any questions or comments or any points that anyone would like to make.
Prabhuji,
such a wonderful class on how often we have to go through the head to get to the heart. In this Paribhasa Sutra, this verse, which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur designates as the most important verse to understand the whole Bhagavatam. Previously, you had said that many of the acharyas have different opinions about particular points. My question is, do all of the acharyas agree with Vishwanath Chakravarti that this verse is the Paribhasa verse? Or does this merely indicate Vishwanath Chakravarti's rasa with Krishna? And is he, since there is argument that Gaudiya Vaishnavas in general lean more towards Gopi rasa, is there some argument that Vishwanath Chakravarti Maharaj may be more suited, for example, to Balav Sampradaya?
Thank you so much, Guruji. I'll just share what my understanding is, and others can add and correct. And my understanding of this being the Paribhasa Sutra is not so much in terms of indicating the rasa of this verse, but it's more about indicating the prominence of love, the prominence of sweetness. Elsewhere, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the love of the Brajabasis is like an ocean, and it's like an ocean of madhurya, an ocean of sweetness. And when there is a handful of salt of Aishvarya that Krishna now and again shows, displays, then when that handful of Aishvarya, which is like salt, is thrown into the deep ocean of madhurya, practically it has no impact because their madhurya is so great. And this is true for all the Brajabasis. So my understanding of this being the Paribhasa Sutra is not so much its indication of the particular rasa of Vatsalya of Yashoda and Krishna in that way, but more a sense of in Vrindavan, love predominates. In Vrindavan, they love God. They love Krishna not because he's God. They love God because he's Krishna. In other words, Krishna's personality has come to the forefront, Krishna's charm. So that's my understanding of the emphasis of this being the Paribhasa Sutra. And your second point on whether the Acharyas agree on this being the Paribhasa Sutra, to my knowledge, I've only read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur establishing this as the Paribhasa Sutra. I've not read any other Acharya who confirms this to be the Paribhasa Sutra, but we find it in obviously Sarartha Darshini. I stand to be corrected on that, but I don't know of any other Acharya who outlines the Paribhasa Sutra of Krishna Leela other than Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
All you need is love.
All you need is love. Thank you. I think, Mataji.
Hi, thank you for the class. Prabhu, you touched upon regulation, Vedi, Sadhana, Bhakti, and regulation leads to desperation. So sometimes I kind of wonder, you know, we are, even when it comes to regulations, and we are very selective about our, you know, what we can do and what we can't do. So although we know that that's the most basic given to us, and in the sense that it would take us further in our Krishna consciousness, we are on a very foundational level of kind of getting into our sadhana bhakti. So I was just wanting to know, what do you think? Why are we so selective about even the regulative processes? You know, this is something I can do. What makes us so selective? Like, is it our nardas or just something else?
Well, what makes us selective is that, you see, in the journey from Shraddha to Prem, there's the stages from Ruchi to Ashakti. Ruchi means taste, and Ashakti means attachment. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains what is the thing that changes between Ruchi and Ashakti. And so Chakravarti Pad says, in Ruchi, one is attracted to Krishna. One is feeling inspired in their devotional service, but the inspiration and the attraction is coming from the anga of bhakti. But in Ashakti, which means attachment or connection with Krishna, one is feeling inspiration and attraction, but now the inspiration and attraction is coming from the object of where that anga is aimed towards, in other words, Krishna. In other words, Ruchi means, yes, you're inspired about your devotional service, but it's very much based on the anga. But in Ashakti, it doesn't matter what you do, because it's very much based on the object. Prabhupada gives the example that when a boy and girl are in love, then it doesn't matter what they do. They may go here, they may go there, cinema, park. The activity is secondary. The main thing is that they're together. So we're selective because we may not feel connection with Krishna in that way through every single activity. But there are certain activities which perhaps psychophysically or according to our personality naturally kind of feel right, and therefore we tend and gravitate towards those. So therefore we often encourage devotees that when you decide your services, then do three types of services. Do one type of service which is the one you're inspired by, the one you like. But don't just stop there. Do the services that are required, that the Vaishnavas ask you to do. And three, do services which are difficult, which force you to come out of your comfort zone, and which force you to depend on Krishna. Otherwise, if we only do the services we like for the rest of life, we may not find Krishna, because we may just be practicing on a superficial level.
So to go beyond the superficiality or the some elements of superficiality in our bhakti, when we do things which are difficult and when we do things which are needed, it kind of takes that element out and we just become a servant. And then some extra realization and connection comes. Much more can be said on that, but I'll stop there. Any final points, questions? Okay. Grantharajimabhagavatam ki jai.